Greetings, human beings, and welcome to the fourth episode of Apartment 303, a podcast for community fans. My name is Dave, and alongside our co-hosts Adam and Scott, I would like to thank all of you for tuning into this episode, as well as officially announce that due to all the support and enthusiasm for the first three episodes, going forward, you can count on a new episode from us every other Wednesday. If you're joining us now for the first time, welcome. Apartment 303 is a new podcast where we discuss and debate all things community, attempting to delve into each and every layer of the show, what makes it work, and why we love it. So, without further ado, let me reintroduce Scott and Adam. How's it going, guys? What have you been up to since the last show?
Hey, Dave. I have actually recently completed my Cobra Kai training since it got pushed live to Netflix on Friday. I watched all the episodes from Friday night to Saturday afternoon, and I didn't do much with my life in that time. But I've also recently jumped back into the dating scene, which is always fun to begin with, but with the addition of COVID, just really, you know, makes it more interesting. Adam, what have you been up to?
I have been given the wonderful opportunity to take vacation at work, which I highly recommend to everyone. And I was able to go to the Olympic Peninsula here in Washington and took a good long trip around the entire peninsula, visited the National Forest as well as the National Park, spent several days out there hiking and running and just being outside and kind of tuning the world out for a minute, which was great. And I'm very thankful to have that kind of recentering experience, to borrow some terminology from yoga. It is with a heavy heart today that we are reminded of the passing of Chadwick Boseman, a phenomenally talented, hardworking actor who played many different roles, but most recently and most notably T'Challa in the Black Panther movie and the Avengers series, as well as Jackie Robinson in the movie 42. And I was very surprised and stunned, like most of you, and especially considering that the day of his passing was being remembered in Major League Baseball by it was Jackie Robinson Day. And just to have that timing work out to be on the same day was really kind of jarring for me. And I know those familiar with his work, just a tremendous loss. And we were just so lucky to have been around at a time where we could enjoy his terrific work.
So later in today's episode, we are going to finally discuss and get into some of our actor and character superlatives. To kick things off, however, we're going to start with a fairly broad topic, but one that is very near and dear to my heart, and that is the use of music in the show, as well as the connections and relationships therein. Adam, would you like to kick things off for us?
Yeah, and I'll start by echoing that point of this topic being near and dear to my heart as well. And the three of us all have passion for music, Dave and Scott being involved in bands at various points in their past histories. I just appreciate a good song, and you know, when it moves me in a certain way, it's really important and can be fundamental to the viewing experience, and that's exactly what we get with Community. And I'll just describe my favorite uses of music in Community in particular are when they bring the A, B, and C stories all together in a way that you don't necessarily expect when the episode starts, or when it's used as scathing satire. So those are my favorite uses of music in Community. And I can get into my list here in just a moment, but Scott, I want to give you a chance to weigh in on the topic as well.
Before I do that, can you give me an example of what you would consider a good use of scathing satire for the show in a music use?
I don't want to, because that's my best.
I do want a spoiler alert.
That one's a spoiler. That one's okay. A spoiler for sure. I will come back and I'll bring down the house with it. How's that?
All right. I echo the statement of Adam and music being close to my heart. All things film, TV shows, music plays such an important role, whether it's an original score that really kind of you know, hits the right notes at certain moments in the film. One particular thing that stands out is like the score, both the score and the soundtrack of 500 Days of Summer, for example, is one of my favorite films of all time. And one of the reasons it's up there is not so much like the story. Use of music is what pushes a lot of things I like in terms of television.
Yeah, and it really grabs you in that scene where they're doing the karaoke and Joseph Gordon-Levitt is singing Here Comes Your Man.
Here Comes Your Man.
Really, yeah.
Because totally he can sing too.
Yeah.
I was kind of impressed by his vocals. And like growing up with films like Garden State, of course, is a classic example.
Oh, this
like
song's going to change your life.
Yep. Yep. So Community, without a doubt, also does these things that we have to mention really well. Yeah, I'm excited to dive into some specific examples.
Yeah. So I'll give you, and these are not in any particular order, except I will save my favorite for last. But in that similar vein, like we were talking about, when another musician has already made a song famous and then that's utilized in a film, can be done in a really meaningful way. And the first one that jumps out at me, and I think this is chronologically speaking, is when Troy and Abed are tasked with singing to a rat to get it to perform a particular skill or something along those lines, which is, you know, this tried and true, you know, singing to plants, does it make them grow faster? So it's tied to that kind of pseudoscience testing hypotheses.
Weren't they just trying to like elicit an emotional response from the rat?
Yeah, right. That's exactly what it was. And then again, it comes back at the end when their rat, who obviously and foreshadowingly is named Fievel, runs away, goes missing in the halls of Greendale somewhere.
The Abed only correct name singing for a rat.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's no other better name than that, that's for sure. So then Abed starts singing Somewhere Out There from American Tail, which is hilarious. Even if you don't know this song, if you're not familiar with that movie, like it's still really good at tying all of the stories together, because as he starts singing, the band Green Day, D-A-I-Y-E, has been hired by the dean to play at their Envirodale, you know, Green Week. And that's where Jeff has set up for Chang's ex-wife to come there and dance. So that starts happening. They start dancing. And also during this time, while Abed is singing and eventually joined by Troy, Shirley takes Pierce's advice on how to effectively public speak and offers the class a sandwich. And it totally changes her presentation from a really poor presentation. The professor says, I'm going to have to ask you to put down those note cards. And then by the end of it, everyone just wants the brownies that she's selling. And even though Pierce's advice is actually terrible, like it works out in this particular case. And just bringing and weaving all three of those storylines back together in song, I thought was just terrifically done and hilarious. And I listen to that at least once a week, just because it's so great.
That song sung by Troy and Abed?
Yes, sung from the Community soundtrack, yes.
I did not know it was that close to your heart. I'm kind of baffled and a little blown away. That's a great example of the use of music in Community. And there's a word for it where characters actually hear the music being played.
Okay.
And I think that's another tie-in, I guess. It's a song that like we're all familiar with, or people that have seen Fievel, but it's actually sung by the characters. The characters hear the song. There's a name for it. So just
Encarta it.
In my opinion, like without a doubt, Come Sail Away, the Amy Mann cover of Come Sail Away.
I knew that was going to be on your list. So I'm glad that you're bringing it up. Well, we've talked about it before.
If you really want to, honestly, if you really want me to get choked up, play Come Sail Away by Styx, but also like,
okay, Troy,
I know, right? And that is, so you totally brought up why, because there's a couple reasons. Obviously, like it's a callback and it plays into the theme of like Troy actually literally getting to go on a boat and sail away. We could like read into the lyrics and kind of like interpret things. A gathering of angels appeared above my head. They sang to me the song of hope, and this is what they said. They said, come sail away. I know this is kind of cheesy. I really kind of think that of being the group and what that group did for Troy's character. And, you know, everyone had entered Greendale without much hope or, you know, life direction. And it's so great that they use this song to transition or to play out Troy's character. That episode in of itself is just like super, I can't not cry like during that episode.
For sure.
You know, like how you have to kind of build up to the emotion. You have to go through the whole entire episode to like get into that feeling. I had skipped to this for this segment that we're doing. I had skipped straight to the song, the Troy's Farewell. And I still was like finding myself tearing up, looking at my computer. I'm like, I can't even do my homework right now. I'm supposed to be like looking into this episode.
It's so hard that people always start cutting onions right when that song starts playing. I can't believe it. Just every time, no matter where you are.
Right. My roommate's constantly just cutting onions every day. Where would you put that song for you, or that use of music and community?
In the top tier for sure. And I really like your nuanced take there, because on the surface, it's like, oh, okay, going and sailing away. Okay, I get that. But looking a little bit more deeply, where it's kind of the exact opposite, you know, talking about how the sailing away first took place by coming to Greendale. I think that's a really great take and a fresh perspective. I'm glad that you brought that up. Yeah, it's a great use of song, that particular song. It's a callback to when Troy asks why he's crying. Oh, did I listen to Come Sail Away by Styx again?
Again.
And then, like, they bring it back to that. So no detail is lost in translation there, and it's just it's wonderful. And I'm glad that you put that one on your list. Let's see, I've got a couple more here, and I don't know if we've got time to get through all of them. So many great examples, and no matter what, people will have 3, 4, 5 examples that we don't touch on today that are going to be incredible examples, and they'll be right.
I know. I'm waiting for someone to actually like respond to like when we post this episode up. Like,
yeah,
why didn't you
definitely
mention this? What was your favorite original that came out of the show?
So my favorite original, I'll just double down here because this is also my favorite at all, was the season 3 premiere. The very first scene is a musical number where Jeff, and we don't know it at the time, but Jeff is like dreaming or hallucinating or something, and they're doing this musical number. And then at the end, they ask what Jeff's going to do now that Pierce isn't in the group. And the song is called We're Gonna Finally Be Fine. And we could easily talk about any or all of the music from the Holiday Regional Special episode as just the best scathing critique of the show Glee.
Yeah.
They were all right on the nose. And this, like, if you actually look at the words and the lyrics, is basically, and you'll see it playing out here, is basically Dan Harmon getting notes and feedback on how he needs to make his show more commercially successful, get better Nielsen ratings. And he has the cast sing about it is basically a giant, we're not going to do this. So the first line is, we're going to fly to school each morning. We're going to smile the entire time. We're going to be more happy. We're going to finally be fine. And then we're going to be more calm and normal. We're going to fix our state of mind. We're going to be less crazy. We're going to finally be fine. So here again, you know, all these crazy concept episodes and combining poultry with a mafia movie and just the meta humor and everything. You can see the note that Dan got, which is just to play right down the middle, be more like, you know, The Office, be more like Parks and Rec, do what we know works instead of building this thing that's punk or subversive, again, in the words of Donald Glover from The Table Read.
Yeah, and I guess the fact that it's sung in such a Glee-like type of song, and you have this undertone of poking fun at these other sitcoms and TV shows.
Absolutely, yeah, and then that's a good transition to the next stanza here. We're going to stand holding hands in a brand new land far away from the borderline. We're going to seem like a mainstream dream and be appealing to all mankind. We're going to have more fun and be less weird than the first 2 years combined. And we're going to live forever. And we're going to sleep together. And we're going to finally be sunnily and shinily. We're going to finally be fine. So exactly to your point there, Scott, it's, oh, we'll just have Jeff and Britta end up together. Or just have Jeff and Annie end up together. Because there's that clamoring from fans of traditional sitcoms like, oh, let's get some closure on this. Let's wrap this up. Let's do that and make everything fit in a nice box, neatly organized. And
we need Jim and Pam them. Like, wrap
exactly.
It up.
Yeah. Exactly right. Exactly right. And instead, they do a 2-minute song about that, 1-minute song in that neighborhood, and then set up what I would argue is the single most ridiculous season of any sitcom ever on network television. So they go, you know, 180 degrees from where they were supposed to or where they're setting this up. And it's just the subtlety of that trolling is just so great. And I respect it so much.
Got it. I don't want to get negative here, but I'm going to. You brought up the songs from the Christmas episode, the regional holiday music.
Holiday regional, yep.
I hate Annie's Christmas song.
Oh, man. That was so funny. But lay on me.
Or the Teach Me How to Understand Christmas.
Yep.
It makes me feel uncomfortable.
I think that's exactly what it's trying to do.
I know, and that's why I hate it. Because I'm, like, as a cisgender straight male, I am attracted to Alison Brie, and but the character of Annie is a very different subject, and the fact that they were always subtle, it was always like downplayed a little bit, but this was like overtly sexualized, and it's a satire too of, like, you know, sexualizing women in this song particular, but every time I watch it, I'm like, I don't feel good about this.
Yeah, and I would agree, I would argue that it was the entire point to make you not feel good about this and then take that and apply it to other places where you see it as well. So I certainly understand if you or other folks don't care for it for the reasons you've outlined. Mm-hmm. I like how it points that out and really lampoons how that tends to work out.
Yeah, I'd also like to hear a woman's perspective. Everything else in that episode, you know, there's a reason they almost made it to regionals.
They were this close.
But they saved the best song for the last one in that episode, in my opinion. Ding, 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 ding.
Carol of the Bells, that's a really good one.
Yeah. Sorry, I took us off there.
And this just proves the point earlier that there's so many good uses that we can't stick to a script on this necessarily.
I'm going to throw in my next favorite. It's also not a community original, but I feel like it needs to be said. Ends of the Earth by Lord Huron as the last song. And there's two reasons. One, I think it's a great use of the song for the show and where it was at, but also because it got me into Lord Huron.
That comes again, you know, you give another great example of a really heartfelt use of a song where it really appeals to your emotions, and it definitely does that. That's another one where when that song's playing and Jeff hugs Abed the second time, I tear up every single time without fail.
So I didn't catch that really for the longest time until I started getting involved in our community Twitter account, and someone like had mentioned like that second hug every time. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Again, a subtle thing that just tugs at your heartstrings. Oh man, I'm getting emotional this episode.
Well, I've got one more I want to discuss. And, you know, again, we could go on and on and on about honorable mentions of Florence and the Machine, Matt and Kim, the Fratellis, so many great, the Police with Roxanne, just so much terrific music.
Pillar
the last
garbage.
One that I want to bring up is Daybreak by Michael Haggins. And the story behind it is what makes it even more enjoyable to me. So it's that one that sounds like elevator music that it comes up several different times throughout the show. And the story behind it that I've heard and read is that community was always being told, hey, you're over budget. You can't do that. You can't do this. You're over budget. So Dan Harmon finds this song, or someone on the staff finds a song that's affordable, and then they just keep using it as a placeholder later on throughout the season, or seasons plural. And it is, to me, very similar to when Monty Python and the Holy Grail used coconuts to make it the sound of horse clopping as the horses are going around, which originally they were just doing that for sound effects, but then they were low on the budget, and then they just put it into the show.
Yeah.
And like, that was an old radio trick that people would do when you couldn't see, but just making that a fourth wall break, probably not a direct allusion to Monty Python. We do have one of those in a specific episode, but again, just to me, the story behind it, it's like why Apocalypse Now, or Hearts of Darkness, is way better than Apocalypse Now. So just kind of the behind the scenes stuff.
So you appreciate both the strategic use of the song and the actual song itself, or
that song is literally my ringtone.
That's amazing. And I'm surprised I haven't caught that, probably because you don't get phone calls when I'm around.
Oh,
sad Keanu.
I feel like I need to jump in and add real quickly here. When it comes specifically to Daybreak, just in researching music for the show and really taking things to the next level, I came across something curious when I was looking at his website, which is essentially the show Community was a big career break for him. It wasn't just benefits on the community side. I mean, he was a professional musician long before, but didn't have the kind of mainstream successful pop culture connection to really take his career to the next step, to the point where now if you look for Michael Higgins, he bills himself as that guy from the song you like from Community.
That's awesome.
writer of Daybreak that you know from Community. So I just, that really is something that stood out to me, especially in terms of that song. And felt like I really needed to get in there. Before we wrapped up today's discussion, we've gone almost 25 minutes on the subject, and I would say barely scratched the surface.
Absolutely.
It is safe to say we will be revisiting this topic probably multiple times. I expect a fair amount of feedback on stuff we missed, or, you know, just from my perspective, I really enjoyed listening to you guys go back and forth on that, but there were a lot of things that we definitely did not get to, so I'm very excited to get to that in the future. So even though we spent a great chunk of time getting into music, I do want to touch on something that we've kind of teased, but, you know, was born out of a conversation we had very early on. Basically, started with the question, which of the characters would you most want to hang out with? Then we started talking about the actor side of that question, and then just kind of opened it up to more superlatives in general. So, Scott, do you want to kind of take the reins there and share some thoughts with us?
Sure. Definitely something I've thought about a lot. When we watch TV shows, Adam always like describes it as inviting them into your home and into your life. I'm totally butchering how you pitch it, but that's...
Oh, that's nice.
But really, you invite these characters to hang out with you and into your life, and like you actually start thinking about like, oh, these are my friends. And honestly, like where I'm at right now, I would immensely enjoy having Annie around because of her discipline and the way she structures her life. And I really respect and kind of aspire to that. I'm kind of at a point where a lot of my day, since I'm unemployed, is constructed by me. And I try to think about like, how would someone like organize like Annie approach this type of thing? And Annie is also one of the most underrated silly characters. In my opinion, there would be a good balance of both structure and also like she's very idealistic and I think she sees the best of a lot of people, and be nice to have someone like that around. Adam, who do you want to hang out with?
So first of all, I just want to point out that when you talk about Annie being an underrated, silly character, I think it's a great example of seeing Alison Brie come through the character of Annie in some really fun ways. The thing that comes to mind is when she says, your gravy train is leaving the station, and she acts like she's a locomotive, and then Troy says, ignore what she's doing, we're serious. That's just such a perfect example of what you're talking about, I think.
I like when she stops using language.
That's one of my all-time favorites, too. Point very well taken, and I agree, too, in a time that's so nebulous and lacks structure. We need people like Annie, otherwise the lights go out.
Exactly.
To quote Jeff from the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I have invited a couple actors from the show into my proverbial living room by following them on social media. And if I had to pick one, it would be Yvette. So I'm going for the actor just because of how wonderful of a person she plays on the show, this motherly character with some negative traits, because all of the characters are, you know, imperfect in some way.
Obviously.
And based on what I've seen on social media presence, Yvette Nicole Brown is that, except minus all of the things that would have made Shirley go to a community college and not been already successful in her own right. So just this loving, caring person who just spreads positivity and love. And it's just so encouraging and so heartening to follow her on social media. So that's my answer for the actor I would like to be spending time with right now.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Rash, I also follow him, and he's similarly minded.
On Twitter or Instagram?
Instagram, yeah.
Okay. I need to follow him. I don't know if I do. To your point, though, Yvette is fiercely passionate about her activism right now and everything that's going on.
Absolutely, she is.
And to have her insight and input and to be able to pick her brain on these subtopics right now.
Yeah, definitely. And when we get in the habit, not, you know, me specifically, but anybody at some point in time has probably thought, oh, this is just an actor. I don't necessarily care what they have to say. But it turns out she's an actual activist and is someone who I would learn a lot from. And that, in addition to being cared for, that would be a really cool balance to strike.
So where do you fall for an actual character in terms of...
So I feel like I could cheat and pick Troy and then get Abed as a package deal. That seems like maybe I shouldn't do that.
He just wrinkled like my cheating. Brain. Like that would that's the obvious choice there.
It's 100% the obvious choice.
Obvious choice.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm reaching here.
That's okay. I think I would probably pick Abed because he's always satisfied with what's going on, and he would be able to provide some normalcy in that way, and he would be able to help with this podcast, and it would be so much better if we had Abed on this show.
Holy crap, I did not think about what he could bring to the podcast. Constructive feedback is always appreciated, and Abed would probably have some of the best insight.
He would have a lot of feedback. Some of it probably would even be constructive.
Exactly.
What about you, Scott? Who's your pick for the actor?
Actor was more difficult for me to actually pick because everyone that's involved with the show is... Everyone's amazing. And I'm not like cop out here, but like I really like all the actors of the show and how they are personally in real life. Since you got to pick two by default, I really would like to hang out with Ken Jeong and Joel McHale. When I first heard they were doing a podcast together, I kind of thought it would be an unlikely pairing almost. But then you have to remember Ken Jeong is not Chang. Yep,
exactly right.
And that speaks to how good of an actor he is and what he brings to that character. So yeah, Ken Jeong is a very level-headed and intelligent person, and I would just love to have a conversation with him. Joel McHale is a lot more easygoing and laid back than I would have thought.
I told you by the time I met Joel, right?
I've seen the picture. I remember asking you about it a while ago, and what I mostly remember is he was a nice dude.
So that's what it came down to. He was doing stand-up at the University of Kentucky when I was at grad school there. It was really good stand-up. and I had nothing to do the next day. So we just waited. My friend Kevin and I, shout out to Kevin. We waited, and he does not have Changnesia. It's a different guy.
I was about to ask, does he have Changnesia?
So we hung out afterward, and there were, I don't know, maybe five people outside the Singletary Center there after the show. And the people walking Joel to his car said, hey, no, you all need to disperse or something along those lines. And Joel kind of cut him off. He said, they're fine. They're totally fine. So he talked to us for a couple minutes, and we were just like in a little group there. And it was super cold out. He didn't have to do any of that.
Yeah.
And he...
Midwest winters aren't a joke.
No. and then he could tell like all of us were too shy to ask. He's like, so do you guys want to do pictures now? And then we did, and it was awesome, and he was so nice, and that makes me appreciate his acting even more, because he's not naturally that type of person. So that's my quick spiel about bragging about how I met Joel McHale one time.
And it's kind of funny at, you know, the episode where they film the movie and they pick at Jeff's acting abilities. Yeah. I had always consider Joel McHale probably to be one of the weaker actors, because it's such a talented cast. But hearing you talk about your experience with him and listening to him more on his podcast, the character of Jeff is far and away not how he is personally. He still has that wit and that charisma that Jeff carries. That's so cool to hear. Was there anything in particular that he said that kind of stood out to you, that you remembered and kind of took with you?
Oh, I was floating on cloud nine. I couldn't understand the words that he was saying other than, so pictures?
Awesome. I feel like it's a good time to transition.
Yeah, I want to get your take on best couple.
Oh.
Again, if we're keeping with the idea of doing superlatives like you would maybe see in a high school yearbook or something.
Vicky and Fat Neil.
Ready. Boy, I don't even have a response to it.
They're the only functional one. The only functioning couple that like stuck together. I know a lot of the people are on team Jeff and Annie, and I don't know. I'm not fully aboard that train. Like I could see myself standing there. I'm going to continue with this metaphor. I could see myself standing there with the ticket to the train, but I just don't see myself jumping on it yet. Any thoughts and feelings on what I just said? How do you want to react?
I tend to agree with you, and my response to best couple would actually be Jeff and Professor Slater. That was the pairing I liked best.
Ooh.
And it represents a shift in the complete opposite direction, whereas the Jeff and Annie of it all would puts Jeff in this position of power by virtue of being older, but flipping that and having Professor Slater, you know, who's the accomplished within the context of Greendale, the accomplished one, be in, you know, the leadership position, I suppose, of that relationship. I like that for Jeff. The question is whether or not he could actually deal with that, you know, once he had been disbarred.
You would hope.
It would have represented some character growth, that's for sure. And I'm not saying that I want that, like, that would have played out best in the show.
And you kind of struck, like, another topic that I do want us to dive into at some point, of, like, Jeff's character arc, and do you like it? Does it go with how the show ended? All right, biggest flirt?
I think that's Jeff. I don't think there's any question. We just named four different people that Jeff has dated.
Yeah, that's a gimme for sure.
Jeff's not even about flirting with the dean when it suits his purposes.
Right.
Or is Dean the biggest flirt, since he flirts the hardest Jeff? Flipping the script here.
Yeah, that's certainly the most overt flirting that takes place in this show. Quick aside, I remember hearing Jim Rash at some point say that he would deliberately, in every scene, invent a way or reason to have to touch Joel, or to touch Jeff's character.
Yeah.
Which is so great, not only from an acting choice, but just like so funny that he would even do that. And like, if you go back now, you'll see he touches Jeff in basically every scene.
I just assumed that was part of the writing, but the fact that Jim Rash just came up with it as something to do for his character, that's amazing. I love it. Good interjection, Dave. That's got to be down to Jeff and the Dean.
I think so.
Most likely to become famous.
I like that question because we're talking about the characters on the show, and I don't think it's Jeff.
Okay.
Because part of it, like, we have to figure out what their profession is going to be and how they're working through that. So I think the most likely to be famous would be Abed by virtue of going into film and that kind of aspect. So I think Abed is the most likely to become famous based on just his career likelihood. I mean, how many lawyers do you know who are truly famous? Or
right.
How many deans or FBI do you know agents. That have made Dean Quarterly?
Although Shirley Sandwiches certainly has the potential to take off.
Could, but I guess actually I'm overlooking the obvious choice, which is Chang, because he does become famous for becoming the Oh Ham guy.
He does, but it's the 15 minutes of fame. So, well, yeah, I guess that is the obvious choice because he actually achieved it. So I feel like we got to go with that on just like a technicality. But I did like, as soon as you had started breaking down why Jeff wouldn't be the most famous, I was like, yeah, well, it's got to be. I kind of went to the same place. I'm like, well, then it makes sense Abed is. So I feel like obvious choice, because he technically achieved it, would be Chang. But if we're going to say, like, if another character is actually going to make it, also, if we're talking about the Greendale, are we keeping this to the Greendale 7, or are we talking all Greendale?
Let's go all Greendale.
All Greendale. I was hoping we would. All right, so
Luis Guzman.
Yeah, that's
they've
two.
They've got a statue and everything.
Yeah, right. Best conversationalist, possibly Shirley or Britta.
Yeah, I think, and I was going to make the point that it's probably either Shirley or Britta, so long as you agree with what their philosophies are. Mm-hmm. I think Britta's probably slightly more open-minded than Shirley, the character is portrayed to be, but
Britta's just
Britta
super
definitely, she has a lot of empathy and compassion.
Exactly.
Like, that's even with the goblins whose woods you may be infiltrating.
Guys, we got to do something about these goblins.
Yeah, exactly. So all right. Empathetic to a fault, maybe, but that would probably make for a pretty decent conversation.
Best sense of humor or funniest?
I think Troy probably has the best sense of humor. I love all of the times that he makes jokes that are flops, and he's the only one who thinks they're still funny. To me, that's hilarious. Don't eat the crab dip. That one gets me every time. Because, like, I can relate to that. Like, oh, there's something funny here. Let me come up with it. Let me craft it.
Yeah.
And the notches.
The harder you try.
That's one of my all-time favorite bits of the entire show.
The notches?
Yeah, when Jeff he takes out his key and he makes a notch for ab mentions when Annie says something about it.
Oh my
and
God.
Then Abed does the same thing when Jeff has a wingerism or something along those lines. Then Troy's just laughing like he gets it, and his just says notches, and there's like way more notches there than anyone else has. Oh man,
are making a pretty strong case that you overlooked Troy for best conversationalist.
Let's hear it.
Well, just because of what you're saying, you know, how much whimsy and fun and commitment he brings to a conversation. You know, if you're going into a conversation with a goal of learning something or being specifically constructive, you guys made really strong cases for Britta and or Shirley. But viewing conversation as more of a fun adventure type thing, I think Troy is absolutely, absolutely the choice there. And I think transitioning to this next question, you guys have kind of made that case somewhat retrospectively.
That's a good point. Troy is the character that makes me laugh the most, for sure, like out loud. Yeah. As a viewer, though, that's what makes me think he's like the best sense of humor. Would the rest of the Greendale 7, would they vote him the most funny of the group?
I think the one thing we can be sure of is if anyone from Greendale is responsible for voting, that the winner is going to be South Park.
Well said. Well said. Let's leave it there for today. We'd like to take this time to thank each and every one of you for tuning in, and invite you to join us in our next episode, where we will be discussing the series ending, as well as episode 8 from season 1, Home Economics. Apartment 303 is now available on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. For Adam and Scott, this is Dave signing off. We will see you in episode 5. Thank you.